Hello, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to our Insulin Resistance Practitioner Training. It is the coaching call, and I'm excited to be here live with you to talk to you about cases and however I can support you in this journey. I looked to see if anybody had submitted a case in advance, so I didn't see it. But if you have particular clients you want to talk about, or tough cases, or just questions about how to proceed, how to get started, whatever is up and whatever things you'd even like me to review from the content, I'm happy to do. I'm here for you for the next hour to hour and a half for whatever you need. So the way that we connect during this is you do a *2 on your telephone keypad. *2 will raise your hand. I'll see it. We're in Q&A mode. So if I don't see your hand, which sometimes happens, you can do a *7 and that opens your line. That's what Annette just did to her, for herself. You just do a *7, it opens you up, and then I can hear you. So I'm really excited to be here. It feels like it's been a really long time, and I think it's just been a month, but it's a long space between calls. So I'm excited to share and to be here for you as a resource. So if you have a question, *2. We also have the chat going and the Q&A. So I'm gonna look there and see if there's anything typed into the Q&A. I just saw something come in on the chat. Nothing on the Q&A. Sometimes people do the Q&A when they can't make it to the call. And if ever you can't make it to a call, you just click the link in the email and it will get you to the Q&A and you can put the question in. All right, so Janine, I wonder if you can explain how to detect leptin resistance. That's a great question. It's an awesome question, actually. Resistances are hard to quote-unquote diagnose with medical testing. We can always test somebody's leptin levels. If somebody has a very high leptin level and they're overweight, generally I consider that leptin resistance. If someone is they're horrendously hungry and they're very overweight, that means they're producing a lot of leptin in their fat, but that appetite can not be turned off because the cells are not seeing it. So those are some of the ways. You can test leptin. You can go to LabCorp or Quest or any of those labs and test leptin. Generally, I don't do it very much. I don't think very many practitioners do it. It's just not one of the things we do as a course. If it's very low and somebody is overweight, that would be really interesting. We wouldn't expect that because it's produced by the fat, so it would have to be explored as to why. And if someone is like very, very thin and their leptin is high, that would be interesting. So those are things you wouldn't see necessarily. So you would expect to see in a really thin person that they are making, you know, they may be making too much leptin actually, and that could cause a suppression of their appetite. So that could be somebody who's very thin and they can't gain weight and they're eating a lot and they're just not hungry, but they're trying to gain weight. That could explain that. That could be a sign of leptin resistance, somebody who's real thin but has a really big appetite, or doesn't have a big appetite, has no appetite, and it's really hard for them to gain weight. But somebody who's overweight and has high leptin levels and just has an appetite they can't stop eating, it could be leptin resistance. So we also look at insulin. It goes hand in hand with insulin resistance. So if somebody has insulin resistance and you know how to test all the signs of insulin resistance, elevated fasting insulin, the hemoglobin A1C above 5. I say even above 5.2 would be considered abnormally high for me for our purposes of ideal situation. Somebody with the elevated glucose, someone with the symptoms, right? They do the insulin resistance quiz, which you all have access to, and they look and they go, whoa. I'm hungry after all meals, and I just have to eat sweets after my meal, and I'm exhausted in the afternoon, and all those sorts of things that you know to look for. So leptin resistance and insulin resistance do go hand in hand. You know, I have worked with people who it's just, the appetite just doesn't turn off. It just doesn't turn off. They're trying to lose weight. They eat what I would consider a hefty meal, but unless they eat like overeat, they're hungry in between meals. So that kind of person could easily be leptin resistance. Margo, what can you take supplements? You know, Margo, that's an interesting question. It's really a matter of lifestyle to change leptin resistance. There are some supplements, and there's one called mango seed extract, African mango seed extract, that has some promise. There are a couple of homeopathic remedies that are supposed to help people with leptin resistance. But in reality, it's all the things you've been learning about here in this program that's going to help them to get change. Lynn's saying that leptin given to animals promote weight loss and satiation, but in obese humans, it does not promote significant weight loss. Probably because the animals are actually deficient in the leptin, and the obese humans are not deficient in leptin. They're actually leptin resistant. So it can actually make it worse taking leptin. So I don't think that's a solution by any stretch. Just like, you know, taking insulin is a last resort for people with blood sugar imbalance, because the insulin has its own problems and then creates resistance and makes the problem worse rather than better. But those are the only things that I know about. Okie dokie. So let me see. Any other questions typed in? I don't see any questions typed in. I'm going to check back to the here. So, star 2, ask your questions about what's going on for you. Just check in. How are you using this material? How far along are you in it? Are you almost finished? Are you ready to submit some cases and get certified? We're open to that. And have you taken any people through the program, either our, you know, sweet spot solution type program or your own? Love to hear it. So Robin, hi Robin.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
I am great. I am just starting to get back on board. I don't know if Dana told you, but I kind of extended my time away. So I totally worked on healing my mind, my heart, and my soul, and I had lots of fun. So, but now I have to now go back into the physical and kind of get into this program. So I only did that first, the first module.
Okay.
So I guess I'm looking now, like, what is the best way? How do I find, because I know lots of people that have insulin resistance or they're diabetic. How do I find the right person for me to work with? And how do I, what would you suggest that I kind of look for to kind of pull someone through the program?
Yeah, so if you're looking for somebody like a test case, right, and you're not out to, you know, get somebody to pay you to do it, it's usually pretty easy, right? So look to your closest people, like friends, family members, and say, hey, I'm going through this program. I think it could really help you a lot. I'm going to be charging a lot of money to take people through it later, but for now, I'd love to take you through it. You open. So that's one way to do it.
Okay.
If you're looking to actually charge someone, then, you know, it's all, it goes back to, you know, finding the ideal client for you. And it's really just doing.
Yeah, no, and that's not what I'm looking for. I'm just wondering if you had an ideal situation that you thought like would be the best thing. Because for me, ideally, I wish I could find someone that was just insulin resistant. I'm really afraid of the people that are on medication because I'm just afraid of all the complications that can happen.
Yeah. And in general, as you do it more, you will realize it's not, unless somebody's, you know, been on insulin their whole life, they're type 1 diabetic, it's a lot different. But the people who are on metformin and other oral diabetic lowering medications, our experience has been, for the most part, that after a couple of weeks, they just don't need them anymore. And most a month if they're really following through.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a lot of them out there that have insulin resistance that don't know it. So that's a matter of, you know, you have to be close to them and have a rapport with them, unless you're actively doing educational pieces, so that they get, hey, did you know that this can be insulin resistance and I can really help you and I'd love to help you. And I'm, you know, going through this program and I'd love for you to be my subject, so to speak. Right.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, if there is somebody that's on medication, if they're on insulin, then, you know, it's a little more scary if you haven't done it before. But seriously, we have people that go off their insulin. Not that you tell them to.
What you do is
you tell them they need to work with their doctor, that, you know, you want them monitoring their blood sugar. And as soon as you see them going low, we had one person in our program back in February. She was on one of the calls and she says, I'm feeling lightheaded. I'm feeling woozy.
I was on that call.
Right. You know, and it was like, you got to get to your doctor. Right. But she'd been experiencing that and not telling her doctor. So it's really important when you're working with someone that you let them know if this is happening, if you're finding that your blood sugar is going low, you got to talk to your doctor if you're, and she was on medication, right? So she ended up having to lower her dose of the medication because she was over medicated.
Right.
And that was quick. Now, if you're working one-on-one with people, you're generally going to keep track of them much more closely, right? And you may have them do a daily check-in for you. If they're on medication, for sure, when they first start, do a daily check-in, send their logs, you know, make sure that they're not getting into trouble and make them sign something, you know, that says, I'm not a doctor, I'm educating you, but this stuff is profound. And when you make your own changes, you may end up with very low blood sugars if you're on medication. And I want you to make sure and promise that you're going to be in touch with your doctor to help you with those adjustments if need be.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Does that make sense? Okay. Great. Anything else, Robin?
Nope. I think that's good for right now. Like I said, I just kind of got to dive back in. So
yeah.
And it all got settled back in again. So
good for you. I'm glad you took that time for yourself. It's so important.
It was wonderful. Like even when I came home, people were like, "You look like you're glowing. You look like the dark cloud is gone from my, you know." So it feels really good.
I'm so happy that it does, and I'm so happy you got to do it. And then just get in, you know, get in as deep as you need to get into, and you're completely surrounded by people with insulin resistance. So. Not hard to find people who fit the bill.
Oh, no. Every time, I met a guy that was in, because on my way home, I stopped in Las Vegas, and I met a guy who was a great guy that I had his information, but he's a person that's trying to do some of his own stuff, and he does his own cooking, but he doesn't have enough of that knowledge. So I gave him, I think, your name, too, to go and look at the sweet spot, but I also told him I was going to be doing a program, and he could probably go through it with me if he wanted to share his information, you know? So I haven't gotten back in touch with him yet to see, but that was he was a cool contact because he was definitely a person that was already trying to make changes, but he was missing some stuff. Like he was making his own pizza, but he was still using pepperoni and cheese. But he was taking a step, like, you know, it was like, oh, you got to go deeper than that.
A little bit deeper than that. What was he using for crust? Did you
I think he was using, I want to say he was using a gluten-free one or something, but.
Not helpful for insulin resistance, right? You know, you guys know you can make a cauliflower pizza crust.
Yeah, I did know that. Like,
so good. It's so good. So, and you can look that up. Most paleo books have a cauliflower pizza crust. I edit those because I don't put eggs in, but, you know, there's a lot of ways to do that. And they're excellent, so. Well, good luck with that and keep us posted. And, you know, we'll keep you in mind and anybody that's looking for to do that as long. We want you to be further along before you take on anybody in our program. So keep going.
Oh, yeah. I'm not ready. Like I said, I only went through the first module. And Jane's going to have me. Jane wanted me to, I don't want to say she's challenged me. She's telling me to really like best use my time with her now, like to stop if whatever blocks that I have. She wants me by July to have whatever I want as far as my program. She wants my program outlined and ready to go. She wants me to start teaching like now.
Great. You're ready. You're ready for those basics, especially if it's a food. You know, if you make a food-based program, like, you know, how balancing your blood sugar with food or getting your energy back with food, that sort of thing.
Right.
You're totally ready for that.
Right. And that's what she said. So she goes, but then for me, I just kind of like shut down. She's like, no, well, I'm just bullet this out. And then so I got really excited. So that's why I just have to now sit back, go through the program. And then as I'm going through the program, do my outline along with it because I can go back and forth for the referencing. Yep. So I'm really excited about it.
I'm excited for you. Very excited for you. Yay. The world is going to actually finally get you out there.
Hopefully.
Not hopefully. That's a good goal. Wah, 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 wah. You should know better than using that word.
I know. Jane has a little bit of work to do with me.
Say, that's my intention. Let me hear you say that. Instead of hopefully, that's my intention.
That's my intention. I am going to be, my intention is that I am going to be certified by October. And when I come to Shine, I'm going to be ready. And then I want to go deeper. So.
Perfect. Awesome. Great job. Thanks, Robin. All right. That was great. Anybody else have stuff? Lynn, have you had any cool cases to share? Anything recently? We have Lisa. Yay. Lisa from Minnesota. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing good. The weather is finally getting nice up here, so it's nice to be able to get outside and enjoy the sun.
Nice.
So one thing popped into when you kind of talked if we started doing any case studies and that kind of stuff. I'm in both the ISPRT and the CMDS.
Uh-huh.
Do we have to do separate case studies, or could we do a case study that could be covered under both?
That's a good question. It's usually the numbers of case studies that we're doing, like, to get the certification. I'd have to have a chat with Lynn and see what the case is, if it really is, you know, it's a possibility. Let me have that discussion. Nobody's ever asked that before, and we haven't thought about that.
Okay, yeah, because I have a coworker that I had been working on the digestive stuff with, but I think she has also some insulin-resistant things, and she'd be probably interested in working on some of that.
Person, but you're going to write a case, you're going to write her up for CMDS, you're going to write another, it's almost like you're writing a separate piece for the doing for both ways. Yeah, absolutely, totally, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And then another thing is I through the program, hearing how, you know, this relates to Alzheimer's and that kind of stuff, and just I hear more people around me, you know, maybe I'm paying attention to it more. They're talking about, oh, this person has Alzheimer's. Oh, this person, you know, seems like they could be going that way. So I was just wondering, you know, if you do ever work with someone that has Alzheimer's or is going that way, what are kind of the best things to start out with?
You know, I think that in addition to the regular stuff that you'd start out with, because if they have Alzheimer's, they're insulin resistant. I mean, they are. So you do the same stuff. I'd probably make sure to do the lab testing, get their fasting insulin levels, get their hemoglobin A1C, have them do their monitoring, and do the same sorts of things you would do. But the thing I would do would be to add some good fats. So I would make sure that they're getting coconut oil or MCT or coconut whole coconut or coconut oil or MCT oil, depending on their weight. If they're way overweight, you may not want to do as much oil. You want to do the whole food. But there's been some amazing studies in somebody with outright Alzheimer's using that MCT from coconut can be phenomenal for helping their brain repair. And of course, you got to get them on the low glycemic diet. You've got to get their insulin resistance reversed. But those are that's an additional thing that I would add to that. Gluten-free is super important with Alzheimer's. Super important. Lots of studies on that. That makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah. That does.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
You know, here's the thing. People are almost more afraid of Alzheimer's than they are of cancer, right? Cancer will kill them. Alzheimer's makes them wish, you know, they're just out of it. They have nothing left of their life. So, you know, if you say Alzheimer's to somebody, oh my God, okay, what do I have to do to prevent that? I didn't think it was preventable. I didn't think it was reversible. And if you let it get full blown, it's less likely to be reversible, although there's lots of indication that it can be. But the thing is, you want to prevent it. And that's why getting everybody early on to get their blood sugar balanced is so critical for not just preventing diabetes and heart disease and strokes and hypertension and cancer, but also Alzheimer's biggie.
Alzheimer's. Okay. Yeah, that's good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Anything else?
I don't know if I've gotten are we supposed to get a free spot in the sweet spot solution? I don't know that I ever got the email for that yet.
Here's the thing. It was the way it was set up was you got that right away. And at that point, you're like, what's to do with this? So it's probably buried in an old email that you got back in January. January when we offered it. But we'll make sure that gets out again. Lynn, would you please make a note of that for me? We'll make sure that they get that email sent again. And we'll actually maybe put it in some kind of a reminder sequence so that if you don't do it, you'll get reminded once a month or something. Hey, are you ready yet? Hey, are you ready yet? Because, like, you know, when you first start, you're not ready. You're not ready to take somebody through that program. So it makes much more sense for you to go through it yourself. That's why we give you access to Sweet Spot. We encourage you to just do those pieces yourself, on yourself, and then while you're learning from the practitioner end. And then once you're, you know, maybe two-thirds of the way, three-quarters of the way through, you'll be feeling like, okay, I'm ready to take somebody else on.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just by a show of hands. Has anybody actually taken us up on that, taking somebody through Sweet Spot? Is there anybody that's done that? Raise your hand, start to, if you have. Yeah, it looks like nobody has. And if you're on the chat, go ahead and type it in if you've taken somebody or you are in the process of taking somebody through. I love this, Margot. She says, do you think a simplified version of this program would be appropriate for middle school and high school students? Absolutely. And if you create it, I'll help you promote it. We'll get it out there because that is something that I totally think should be. I don't mean this program at the Sweet Spot, not the practitioner training, but definitely taking people through that. I think it's great. Margot wants to know how after the class is over. We don't have a time when we take it away from you. So unless we drop the program, we promise you get it for a year is what we promise in our, when you signed up, but we pretty much have never taken it away from anybody, which means that most people that have it get the updates as they come along, which, you know, most programs don't do. So we just want to give it to you forever. Yeah, so you it might not have been everybody that got the spot. It might have been the early signups. We'll go back through, Lynn, and we'll figure out if it was. I think we might have given, I don't remember, it's been like 4 months. I think we might have given it as an early signup bonuses for people who signed up, you know, within a window or after a webinar or something. It was given as a bonus, yeah. Yeah. But we'll let you know, and if you get an email to that effect, we'll make sure that you get it. We'll make sure. Yeah, we sent it when you first joined, Margo, it was a welcome email. It said, hey, welcome to the program. Here's your access details. By the way, you also get access to this Sweet Spot for a client, and here's where you go for it. But like I said, it was not the appropriate spot for it. So we'll make sure it gets resent. I thought I had requested that it get resent, but apparently it hasn't. So we'll make sure. Let's see. Yeah, Lynn says leptin resistance is now believed to be the leading driver of fat gain in humans. I very much can see that. She put up an article. Okay, let me see. Let's see. I'm going to look back over here, see if anybody else has questions. Janine says in nutrition, it talks about foods, herbs, and herbs that raise insulin, like cucumbers. Needed by beta cells to produce insulin and helps insulin resistance, not comprehending this. I don't believe it says it like that. I have to see exactly what it says and I can help you with that. No, there was a section that said foods and herbs that decrease insulin resistance. I don't remember foods and herbs that raise insulin. I mean, there are some that... there are some that have an insulin-like effect, and I mentioned it in the list of herbs that are often used with insulin resistance. Like, it's suspected that perhaps, what's the name of it? Oh, it was not ginseng. Was it ginseng? Yeah, it was ginseng. That ginseng may have an effect on raising insulin levels. So that would be good for somebody who's a late-stage type 2 diabetic or somebody who's a type 1 diabetic. And not, you know, proceed with caution with somebody who is insulin resistant and overproducing it. There's a particular chemical in cucumbers that can be used by the beta cells to produce insulin if need be. So it can actually support a system that's not able to make insulin on its own, I think. I'd have to see it. I have to go back to that particular place, and I'll let you know about that. Thanks. Okay. Eva's working with somebody. Yay. Good for you. All right. So Eva, not Eva, Eva. Okay, so I'm going to close you, Lisa, and I'm going to open up Eva, and I want to hear about her experience with the person she's working with. Hi, Eva.
Hello. Hello. You, Dr. Rita Marie.
Wonderful. Thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. I have a question, and I have, I don't know, for some reason I'm hearing an echo. Are you hearing an echo?
I'm not.
Okay, so I'm going to ignore it. I had a pleasure working with a guy from Italy that was visiting a friend of mine, and I'm not sure how long we're going to work together, but he was here for 3 weeks, and he came with fasting glucose at 110.
Mm-hmm.
So he was borderline, you know, having issues. Doctor told him to change lifestyle, but he couldn't really figure out what to do. So I took him through the steps of low glycemic foods. He was able to do blood work, and I was able to plug it into our software. And mm-hmm. according to the software, we saw that he was borderline gout risk, and he loved fruit. He lived on a lot of fruit. When he traveled, he ate fruit and, you know, junk food, basically. Mm. So he changed a lot of the things within the first, from the first appointment that I saw him. And I just got a email yesterday. And one of the questions that I have, he was able to lower his blood sugar to 65 fasting, and the postprandial 97.
Whoa.
Yeah, which is really, really good. It's still pretty big range. So my question is that going to tighten with his lifestyle changes, or is that okay? He's feeling great.
Totally okay. I think that, you know, we talk about the range, right? You're not going more than 25 or 30 up after eating. But I think that doesn't apply when it starts out low, because if that food was really affecting him, the blood sugar would have gone up even higher. So I don't think that's an issue, because it's still in a safe range. I mean, 95 postprandial is awesome.
I was very pleased. He sent a picture, actually, because I asked him to do at least 4 days, because he travels so much, I didn't know how much time he will actually devote to testing his blood sugar before the meals and after the meals. But he's done it for 3 days consistently, and it's really consistent with what his reading is. And he dropped 13 pounds in 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
He must be thrilled.
I am thrilled, and he is very grateful, because he didn't have a lot of information from his doctors, and he was just confused with everything that he was looking at, you know, any kind of a, and in Italy and in Europe is a little bit different. So when he sat down, he was really focused, and he really wanted to change, because he definitely knew that something was off. So I just wasn't sure if that swing of the, you know, of more than 25 points was going to be still an issue. But he does pretty long fasting, because he stops eating around 6 o'clock p.m. and he doesn't have his first meal until around 7 to 8 o'clock.
In the evening. So it's
in the morning.
It's like 11. I thought you were saying the evening. I'm like, oh, that's a big long fast. No, I would say, yeah, that's the 14 hours. That's great.
Yeah,
that's nice. You know, the thing about it is, and I want to clarify on this range, because a lot of times when we use the range, it shouldn't go up more than 25 to 30 points, is when somebody is they're just diabetic, or they're very high right now, and they're not anywhere close to the peak that we want them, the below 110, right? So if their fasting is 120, then we don't want their postprandial to go above 145.
Okay.
That's where it's critical, because you can't use our other criteria. The overarching criteria is don't let it go above 110. And he's clearly not letting it go above 110. So he's within a very safe range.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it really helped with the exercise, giving him just, because he drives all over Europe as a salesperson. So he's on the road a lot and he's next in a car a lot. So I'm just asking him to do the, you know, it for 2-3 minutes, jumping, just pull over, do some push-ups, do anything he can do to raise his heart rate.
Right.
That's really a helpful thing to, for somebody with that type of a lifestyle.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for sharing, Eva.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Star 2 raises your hand, or star 7 opens your line in case I'm looking at the chat and I don't see your hand up. Star 2 to raise your hand, star 7 to talk. Let's see. Janine, did you put another question in? I know I saw your first question. Good. Yeah, so if you find me that section, I think I know what document you're talking about. I'll look it over. Maybe it's just a matter of the way I worded it is confusing. And if so, I'll reword it. Who else? Anybody? I'm going to share a case with you. And this is not somebody I'm personally working with. It's just showing you the power of this work. He worked with us in helping us to do the marketing. He's a marketing guy, and he helped you put together online campaigns. And so he was a guy that helped us and supervised us through this process of, you know, doing these videos and doing all this stuff. And he decided he was going to do the program. Really nice, very congenial, very jolly guy, but very overweight, a lot overweight. So he decided, you know how we have this metabolic reset, the metabolic reset at a glance. It's just the sheet, right, with the page. And what we do is we have an alternate product for people who don't want to go through the whole program. We give them the metabolic reset kit, which is basically the recipe guide, the menu planner, and this metabolic reset at a glance page. And so he was just doing that. He didn't go through the program, but he kind of periodically was keeping in touch with me. So he started it on January 1st. He just reported to me yesterday. He'd lost 39 pounds. He's been trying for a really, really long time to lose weight. He's tried every diet. He's very health conscious, but he just didn't know about this blood sugar thing. So he's been following the metabolic reset kind of diet, and he's been doing it since January 1st, doing his bursts. And the thing is that he reported back, he had no cravings for the first time ever. That would be what would cause him to go off the diet, is the cravings. And seriously, what the cravings come from is continuing to include flour and sugar in the diet and other foods that raise the blood sugar, but making lower amounts, right? And what people who have that susceptibility to food addiction, that doesn't work. So he would be having cravings, and he wasn't eating as much vegetable matter. He wasn't eating the good fats. He was just not doing enough. So he's been doing a ton of veggies. He does some fish. He does some lean animal protein, and he stays away from all the flour, all the sugar, all the grains and legumes. And he's been keeping his blood sugar within range, and he has lost 39 pounds. But here's the kicker. He goes to his doctor for his annual. He'd been on thyroid medication. And that didn't help him lose weight either. The doctor said, oh, this is it. Your thyroid's bad. So they redid all his thyroid, and they decided he doesn't need thyroid medication anymore. So they took him off his thyroid medication, and all his other markers were really clean. So that's exciting, because this was, I think he did this about a month ago is when he reported back. So after 4 months on the program, this is what his results were. So these are the kind of things you can expect with people. And, you know, sometimes I feel like, wow, this stuff is so easy. This is so simple. Why? How could this be so profound? But the point is, it is profound. It's amazingly profound. And when people start to eat this way, amazing, amazing things happen. And we've been getting so many reports of people in the sweet spot, have been writing into the sweet spot Facebook group, and some of them are in our year-long program. It's somebody who, the beginning of it, she'd lost the weight, but she'd also is feeling so much better that she wasn't able to walk more than 40 feet before, and now she's able to walk 4 miles and hike 4 miles. So these are the kind of things to keep in mind, that, you know, work with these people. It's basic, it's simple, and don't get caught up with, oh, but this person also has Alzheimer's, or this person also has Crohn's disease. What should I do? You do the basic stuff, and then there's some additional things that you might do to help them support their gut, say if they have Crohn's disease, or to support their brain if they have Alzheimer's. But the basics are going to go such a long, long way. It's totally amazing. That's why I just love this work. I love being able to work with people this way, and I love to be able to teach practitioners and open up their eyes. And what I love is in this program, as well as in our NEPT, our two-year certification program, we get a number of MDs. And it's so fun for me to have the MDs like going, I got this case and this is what's happening and how do I handle it? They've been trained in medical school for 4 years, but they still feel in the infancy stages of really helping people to get to the root cause. And that's what we do, and that's what's so exciting. So thank you. So Star 2 raises your hand, guys. Otherwise, we're going to have a short call. Let's see. Eva, you're in as I am. That's funny. It's funny, I think, when you type it in, you think you're typing something else or whatever. All right, anybody else? Lynn, do you have anything to add? Anything you've been seeing on our Facebook group? Oh, there's Lisa. Great. Hi, Lisa.
Hi again. Marco had, you know, a great thing about, you know, doing it with middle school students and that type of thing. So that got me wondering of the supplements then, what nutrients and how do you reduce the amounts if you still would have them do that? Or is it best just to work with the diet and some of the lifestyle things?
That's a great question. So, you know, the ideal would be not to have to take supplements, obviously. As adults, especially the people that we tend to work with insulin resistance, they tend to be older, you know, 40-ish. That's not older, that's younger for me, but older as opposed to kids and teenagers. So they had a lot more years of this abusive diet lifestyle that's depleted their nutrients. So they may need to take more. That said, so many kids are low in fatty acids. So the DHA might be totally necessary for them. And we see it as kids who get asthma, they get eczema, they get ADD, things like that that are common at kids. A lot of times the fatty acids will turn around. So the DHA, I'm a big fan of it. You know, in terms of doses, it depends on the size of the kid. So the way I would look at it is if this is a dose, the doses we've given you are the dose for an average size person, like say, you know, 120 to 150 pound person. Or the, you know, the average according to the charts, right, 154-pound male and 120-pound female, something in that range, then you would just take, like, just say the dose is good for 150-pounder. Then the kid weighs 50 pounds. You might do a third or at least start with a third of the dose, right? But I would start with the food. The DHA, you know, depending if they've got symptoms, right, if they are having attention problems, if they're having asthma, they have eczema, you know, the behavioral issues, then I would say make sure you get the fatty acids in there. And probably I would do a DHA-EPA combination, but the DHA is super important for that brain function. So I would look at the person as a whole, right? Magnesium, right? These people, a lot of kids have a lot of muscle cramping and a lot of tightness and hormonal imbalances. So if they've got a lot of other stuff going on, like see if kid around them, not menopause, puberty, couldn't remember the word, then you want to make sure that you're really supporting them. And if they've been on a really crappy diet their whole life, there's no problem with it. You probably don't want to give them all the way up to 800 micrograms of chromium if they weigh, you know, 50 pounds, 75 pounds, 100 pounds. You might want to cut it back, even with small adults, by the way, you know, larger adults. I mean, those doses, it's hard to say, well, here's how do you adapt it to their weight. But a lot of times you do adapt it to their weight. And somebody will take it and they go, I don't need this much. My blood sugar is going too low. Yeah, probably only need 400 instead of 800. So you just adjust it that way. And it depends on where they're coming from, what other symptoms they have, and how bad their diet's been. This stuff should be taught in schools, right? But you know what we're up against? We're up against big food. We're up against big food supplying the schools with crappy food that they get at low cost to put in the cafeterias, some cities, right? We're up against the advertisements that the kids are seeing on TV, and these food companies are ruthless. They are completely ruthless. They are deliberately hearing the reports like, oh, people are getting concerned about sugar. People are getting concerned about that. Let's just put like a table, half a tablespoon of fruit juice into our Tang or Kool-Aid and tell people it's natural because it contains real fruit juice, and then they'll buy it. They don't care about the health implications. They're not watching the stats and see it go down. I'm listening to this book on audiobooks, and it's called Sugar, Salt, Sugar, Fat. And this guy actually went and interviewed various people that work in these food companies, and they spent a lot of money and time to figure out the bliss point of food. What's the exact ratio of the sugar, the salt, the fat to get it to the point where the most people said, oh my God, I want more, I want more, I want more. And they studied it with thousands and thousands of people to come up with this, to dupe people into becoming addicted. How many times do they have to play the commercials for the sugary cereal on the cartoons so that the kids are begging mom to buy it? And how much sugar do they have to put in without putting very little of some of the other foods in there, pieces, components, to keep the cost down. So they're very much profit-oriented. They have no interest and no caring about us, about the people, about these kids. And they just care about duping them. And they're doing the commercials at lower and lower ages now. They used to target to the 12 to 14 or 16-year-olds, and now they're starting to target to the 8 to 12-year-olds to get them brainwashed into this stuff. And to dupe people into thinking it's a healthy food because it has fruit juice in it, or it has less sugar than Coke, like big deal, like 8 teaspoons of sugar. Like, what does it have? 7? I mean, give me a break, right? So we're up against a lot. And I really think that one of my big, big passions would be to get this kind of education in the schools. So any of you that want to do that, you know, and really take that on as a project, I'd be happy to consult with you on how to do that. And, you know, whatever, look at your program, or because that's a passion for me. I just want to see kids grow up to be healthy adults, not to die when they're, you know, 7. We had a friend whose son got a brain tumor and died at age 8. It was devastating. It was devastating. Nobody made the connection between that and, you know, the diet, the foods, anything else. And the kids are getting diabetes. They're getting rheumatoid arthritis. They're suffering, and so much of it. I'm not saying 100% of it is reversible or preventable with food, but most of it is. Most of it is. Most of the stuff people are getting are lifestyle diseases, and that's where we come in. That's where I'm so passionate about training you guys. You know, I've been doing this for over 30 years and been licensed to do it over 25 years, and it's my passion to see more and more of you doing this, younger and younger and younger. I really want to figure out how to reach some of the younger generation people. So more power to you, Margo. I'm happy to support you and help you, and anybody else that wants to do something like that. Let's talk. So that
was I'm trying to reduce my hours at work, so I'm not working full time. But when that does eventually happen, then my plan is to like run my kids through at least the diet portion of the program. We eat pretty whole food, you know, here already, but you know, they like their fruit a lot and have cravings for lots of different things. But yeah,
so here's the thing, you know, when you talk about cravings, you know, fruit is not the enemy. So a lot of people say to me, how can you be teaching people not to eat fruit? Fruit is good food. Fruit in and of itself does not cause insulin resistance or diabetes. If somebody grew up on a diet that was mostly, you know, great vegetables and a lot of fruit, and they never had processed food or sugars or those refined starches and all that stuff, those kids are not going to develop diabetes. But once somebody has insulin resistance, the fruit needs to be eliminated at least temporarily. The fruits that actually cause the cravings and that cause the swing. But I don't think it should be a permanent thing. I think people should be eating lots and lots of fresh fruit, balanced with lots and lots of fresh veggies, so they get the wide variety of nutrients. And, you know, you really just have to keep in mind a maintenance diet versus a correction diet. Now, if you raised your kids from birth eating these this way, then, you know, the chances are that they are not going to – they're just eating whole foods since birth. Fruit is not going to be harmful. But if they weren't, like you switched it recently, they've still got – some of the imbalances caused by those early years, and maybe it's worthwhile. So be careful with younger kids. Teenagers, sure, they go out and they eat crap, right, with their friends. So you can't control them much anymore. But I think that, you're not going to get little kids to start poking their fingers, first of all. So you're going to have to, be watching them. So how do they eat? How do they go with it? Are they constantly craving, more and more and more grapes and raisins and things like that? Are at these expense of their whole fresh vegetables and other foods? So I'd be careful with really young kids unless they're, except for the diet, changing their diet to be a more restricted, not taking away the fruit necessarily, but taking away the crap first. And if you've taken away all the crap and you still see that the kids are not up to their health potential, then yes, certainly working with that. I just want to caution that not to take it like an extremist, take fruit away from kids. Does that make sense? Oops, Lisa, you still there? I still see you there, Lisa. All right. Well, I'll keep you open, Lisa, when you get back. And Robin. Hi, Robin.
Hi. Yeah, so I happen to know, and I used to work in the restaurant with a health teacher in the high school. And then there's one that I know that works in the local school for middle school. And they do have a seminar or something they have, and they have had people come in to do different recipes and stuff with kids. So I'm thinking this would be a good thing for me if I wanted to do a thing for parents with diabetic kids, and then maybe be able to do something with kids separate. But because I'm feeling that kids are getting diagnosed sooner than maybe adults with insulin resistance, or do you think they're getting this? Because I'm thinking kids go to the doctors with more symptoms than adults would go. But how do you, could you do something in the school system if the school nurse was there, if they had someone come in where kids do an experiment and they test their blood like we did? Or is that
That could be fun and they may like it. You would have to have a really open-minded school nurse to do it, but it could be done as an experiment. I think that their fear is contamination, right?
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of stigma and fear around blood and blood products. You have to be really careful and make sure that everybody had their own meter and that everybody had those little disposable lancets. So it could be something that they'd have to invest in. It's not like you can bring in a couple of meters and let them share. That
right.
I don't think that would go over in an institutional environment. But I think just really getting in there and educating them about what that food's doing and how to make, you know how to make really yummy, delicious food.
Right. Well, that's why I thought maybe what I could do is you turn around and you have a seminar where the parents come in and you educate the parents about it. And then the parents can go home and do the testing on their own kids. And then if they see something, if they want, then you have a follow-up meeting where the parents and the kids come in and it's a fun making food, replace snacks, things. And then maybe it could go deeper than that afterwards. I don't know.
Yeah, so I would, my feeling here is as much as I love the testing, you're going to get a lot of pushback with trying to test kids with blood sugar meters with the frequency that you'd need to catch things. It's hard enough, my own kids, I one time tested one kid, and it was I was willing to do, okay, and he goes in his eyes, and he's sticking his hand out, and he was 18 at the time. So they're not real happy with that. And the school might not be, but I think that you don't even need to go there, right? You can have them do their annual if they do that with their doctor and tell the moms and teach the moms that there's a couple of extra things you can ask them to get, like hemoglobin A1C or insulin. But I think with them, you just need to educate them. They don't have the decades of abusive diet and lifestyle behind us like we do.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it's much quicker to reverse something in a kid that's 8 than in somebody else who's 58.
Well, right? That's what I'm saying, because they say there's such a rise in kids with the insulin resistance or diabetes. So,
yep.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. They're probably already diagnosed. So there's probably, I could probably go to the school and get a group of 10 kids probably right away that are probably insulin resistant or diabetic.
I'm not sure that they know that the doctors are necessarily telling parents that their kids are insulin resistant, but certainly diabetics, and there's a lot of them, and there's a lot more type 2 diabetics. you know. So I'm not sure about that, but I know that if you went to the school and you talked about the diabetes problem and you talked about insulin resistance as a precursor and you talked about how occult it can be and it can be there for decades and you can talk about how you can look at a kid and do their waist-hip ratio, that would be a fun experiment that kids would want to do. Oh, let's just measure and let's just do it. It would be like a math experiment.
Right.
Okay. The waist-hip ratio. You can give them a little mini kid questionnaire, like answer these questions. What's your score? 10 questions about how they feel after they eat. You know, their afternoon slumps, their energy in the morning. Do they crave sweets? Do they crave sweets even after they eat a big meal? Do they feel tired after lunch? You know, maybe even 5 questions and get a sense of whether these kids are dealing with insulin resistance. And then you can educate them in a, it could be a parent-child type thing, right? Like you said, and you educate the parents and the children themselves. Those are signs of pre-insulin resistance. And this is what happens if we miss this now. This is the fate that you're up against. And, you know, the obesity sets in, the belly fat sets in, the risk of cancer, heart disease. There are a lot of kids who, you know, they've done autopsies on kids that have been killed in car accidents and found that there was evidence of cardiovascular disease, of plaque in their arteries, right? So I think you are in a position, if that's what you want to do, you create an educational thing that's going to appeal to parents and kids. You don't want to get too technical. But you also want to
get that window of awareness open, because then that's where it starts. And then
exactly. Oh, totally. I think it's a great idea. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I do know, and they're always, the school is always looking for different things to do and experiments and stuff, because I was going to go in, like, I don't know, it was a year and a half ago to do something, because I think they do it every other year. She wanted it, but then the problem was so many kids have the nut allergy. So I'm like, oh God, how do you change? You know, because the superfood brownies would have been good. So, but they're all walnuts. Like, so how do you know? Like,
yeah, but you substitute seeds for nuts.
Yeah, okay.
But very few people have seed allergies.
Right, okay.
Right. So any recipe that you would do with walnuts or almonds, you can do with sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, hemp seeds.
Okay.
Seeds,
awesome.
Whatever.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Great ideas. Thank you, Robin.
Yep. Thank you.
Lisa, are you still there? I think Lisa needs to jump out and jump back in again. Oh, Margo, tell me more. You were able to check their blood. Their parents gave you permission? Was this in a school or not school setting? I want to hear more. Marguerite, you were on the phone. I want to hear your experience with this. Because I think, you know, some kids might be super excited about it when you show them. I just was thinking that the stigma of doing blood in a school, that the people would not like it. I know for my kids, you know, we didn't try it until they were teenagers. So maybe they are more open to it. I want to hear more. Yeah. So you checked to... for 2 days to find their peak, and they love learning. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, we need to talk. All right. Okay. I'll leave Lisa open in case she decides to come back, and there must be something with her line. She just came back in as a different Lisa. Let's see. Lisa? Now you're in three times.
Yeah.
Oops. I'm in. All right, you're in on the web 3 times, so talk this time.
Hello. Nope.
Let me see. Let me check.
There.
Whoops, I closed myself while I was trying to close you. Yes, I hear you, Lisa.
Okay. I got disconnected, and then somehow I had two windows open.
Well, you had three for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Because when I opened both of them, I heard you in echo. So, all right. Okay. Margo, you said you're on the phone. Who are you? I don't see one that says Margo, so tell me where you're from, and I'll open you up. Or raise your hand, star two. Star two raises your hand. Go ahead, Lisa. I lose you again. Hello?
I do not. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can close mine.
Okay, so you're done? Did you hear my, I don't know when you faded out, but.
I faded out, I know, when you're talking about the fruit and, you know, just kind of, yeah, they can, you know, it's good to still have and keep it in, you know, but watch if they are having cravings and that kind of stuff. And then it mm-hmm. started to kind of fade out.
Okay. And I said, you know, basically balance it.
Okay. Yep.
Thanks.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. So, Margo, which one is you? So, Robin and Nat, Lynn, Eva, Janine. I see cell phone, New Jersey. Brandon, Ohio, and so I'm going to try these lines. Margo, you said you're on the phone.
Hunters Ferry, Idaho.
Is that Margo, Idaho?
Yes. Bonners Ferry,
okay.
Idaho.
Yep, I just opened you. Hi.
Hi.
So tell us about your experiment with the kids in the school.
Well, I just I was taking your class, and you said to try and find some case studies, so I thought that I would head that direction, and I figured a few kids would show up, but lo and behold, 50 kids showed up with meters. 50.
And what did you tell them they were showing up for?
I told them that we were just going to check their blood to see what their blood glucose levels were doing, and we were just going to check for their. I kind of did it as a class, as an experiment, and I just let people sign up if they wanted to. Just told them they needed to bring a meter. If they wanted to show up, then I would show them how to check their blood and see where they're at. And, yeah, it was fascinating, and they have had really fun with it.
How much how old were they?
The youngest was in the sixth grade, and I went all the way up to high school, to senior high school. So it was just a class that I just put up there because we have a homeschool co-op. And so it's homeschool kids that did all this.
Yeah, homeschool kids are ahead of the crowd, aren't they? I would say they're much more interested in stuff like this.
Yeah, they probably are.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome, though. 50 kids. And so did you find many that had issues? Did they test enough to see if they had issues?
Yes. So it's actually, what was kind of crazy on some of them is some of them were so skinny, I would never have guessed them to be insulin resistant. Have insulin resistance, but we just talked about, I just kind of went through what you were saying, you know, we went through sleep. That was a big one on most of the kids. They were just like, you know, they were like they woke up at 110, you know, just an example. They woke up 110, and I was like, okay, so how late did you eat last night? And, you know, what time did you go to bed? You know, and ask those kind of questions, and they're like, does that matter? So it's definitely interesting. And these are all active kids. You know, there isn't any overweight ones even in the class. Well, I guess there's a few, but I kind of knew that I would expect those kind of numbers from a couple of those kids. But what was surprising was the kids that are really active and everything, that what they're realizing that they need to watch a little bit in order to keep their numbers down, you know, because I told them they need to be in the 75 to 85 range for their fasting numbers. So, yeah, it's been really interesting for me, too, to implement everything that I've been learning in this class and kind of turn it around and put it in a situation where the kids have never heard any of this kind of information, and so they're just, like, hungry for it.
I love it. I love it. So, you, Robin, go for it. And all of you, like homeschooling, like there's homeschooling communities in every area, most areas, that you can put out there and say, hey, I want to do a class, get a hold of some of those people and that are in charge and that, you know, are in the inn and say, hey, I'd like to do a class for your group of people. I did once a class, it was more of a recipe class for a homeschooling group where I just brought in a whole bunch of food and I made them and I showed them stuff. And I talked about them, obviously, what the health implications and all. We didn't do any blood sugar testing, but they were very fascinated and they loved eating. So, you know, Robin, you could do something like that where you educate them and you can, I'm so thrilled. I'm just overwhelmingly thrilled. This is great.
Yeah. I just kind of told them too. I said, you know, the whole United States are starting to realize that what we've been doing for all these years is wrong. And all the sugar that we have is not beneficial to us at all. And they're just like, wow, we didn't even know. So, and they didn't realize that, you know, to really check out the ingredients and find out how many different kinds of sugar are in ingredients. So right now what we're experimenting with is trying to get 6 vegetables in and 3 fruits, you know. So it's just been just trying it because most of them were, you know, having a vegetable here and there but not really, really trying to.
Right.
So it's been good, eye-opening.
Right? You did this as an ongoing class, multiple weeks?
Yes, I just told them I was going to do it for 5 weeks because that's, you know, we were going to go through nutrition and, you know, stress and sleep and timing and, you know, like that. So we just did it. We're just doing it for once a week, you know, and I thought maybe 30 kids would show up, but 52, it's actually 52 that showed up. I was like, whoa,
awesome.
Okay.
Wow. I'm so excited for you and just, it's, just touched by what you're doing in the world and educating people. And what it really shows up to me, and when I've seen this before, because I've done kids more like food prep classes. I've done them in my house where we had parent and kids come together. And it's the kids that walk away with the commitment and the moms are, they'll be like bugging their moms. No, don't buy that, mom. Remember what she said about that. Remember, we don't want to eat that anymore. So I think the more we can educate the young, the better we're going to have, you know, a healthy, happy, peaceful world because they're going to make those changes when they're young. And it gets really challenging for them when they get to be the teenagers, even if they've grown up like our kids have in a very clean, pristine environment. By the time they get to be teenagers and they're out and around their friends, you know, it's much harder for them. And if the education happens, then it's not going to be harder for them. It's just everybody knows you're not supposed to eat that stuff. It's bad for you.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's definitely amazing how hungry they are to learn that kind of stuff because it's their own body. And checking their own blood, because I told everybody, I showed them how to do it, and then everybody had to check their own blood. And a few boys were squirmish at the first. They're like, ah! But once they actually did it, and then they caught on really fast, and it was just a fascinating to them to realize this is happening to my body, and what can I do to make it so my numbers are good. You know, it just kind of brought it home instead of just, oh, this is how it is for the normal people. This is actually happening to me because I can see it by my blood. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What a great idea. What a great idea. I applaud you for doing that.
Yeah. It's been very, fulfilling for sure.
Yeah. You know, in this kind of case where some of the kids might be more seriously insulin resistant, you know, numbers being higher, that's where you might start to throw in some of the supplements that could help, right?
Yeah, that's what I was kind of wondering. It's what my question was, you know, so really on kids, what kind of supplements would you suggest to a few of them that, you know, that might need chromium, but I don't know that they need 1,000, you know, kind of thing when they're only 12, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, size scope matters too, right? So you're talking up till 12th grade. By the time they're 14, 15, they're full-grown adult size.
Oh, okay.
Right? So I would go by that, you know, but then you look at how many years of this have they had in their past compared to the average 48-year-old who's in this situation, right? So you could, I would start with a lower dose. I would stick with relatively the same amount. And you know what you could do is for chromium and magnesium, you look and compare to the RDA charts for their age, right? So if somebody, magnesium, it's pretty much the same once they hit 14 as an adult.
Uh-huh.
Same thing with the DHA. I would do adult size. The chromium, you might go a little bit lower because they haven't had as many years of strip mining chromium and and all that, unless they are, you know, big sugar junkies or they're super high, then you might go with it. But start with 400 and see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was just a couple in my class that I was thinking I probably would recommend it to, but I didn't know that I really dared, you know, go too far that direction, you know.
Yeah. Yep. Good job. Thank you.
Anyway, yeah.
Super. Thanks for sharing that, Margo.
Yeah, you're so welcome.
Great.
And I have loved your class. I've loved everything that I've learned in it because I have learned so much. So I'm just glad that I can turn around and pass it on to somebody else.
That's the idea, right?
What's that?
That's the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Hopefully that gave you, Robin, some ideas, you know, the kind of thing you can do. And maybe you guys can connect if that's something you want to do and just kind of share ideas. Because I think the more you can do it, the better. And if you can also combine food prepping in it, like, I don't know if you think about doing an extra class for them to show them how to make some really cool stuff, or they don't need it, then that's fine. But getting people excited about the food, it sounds like they're just excited in general.
Yeah,
but getting them
they're excited.
To the food.
And I'm sure we could go that direction for sure.
Yeah. Super. Thanks.
Thank you. All right.
Welcome.
Okay, bye.
Bye. All right. Looks like we've come to our end here. I don't see any more questions in. Let's see. Okay. Yeah, Robin, I agree with you. Robin's experiment is awesome and eye-opening. Great place to start with homeschool co-ops. And I think if you've done it there and you get your experience there where they're a little less, you know, structured and bureaucratic, then you can figure out a way to do it in the schools. Annette says there's an app called Veg Out. It's a list of veggies and challenges you eat with new veggies. You can have your own group challenge. Ooh, I'll have to check that one out. Thank you for the link. VegOutWithRFS.org. Okay, cool. Thank you. All right, guys. I'm going to check the Q&A one more time. Don't see it. And thank you all so much for being here and for sharing. And we'll talk to you again very soon, hopefully. Good luck with everything. And we'll make sure that we get out the note that will show you about how to get your person signed up for Sweet Spot if you're eligible. So we'll make sure we get that out, you know, within this week or next. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye now. I'm going to open up your lines and we'll say goodbye. Bye. Whoops. Again. Bye.
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 Thank you.